You are listening to the Purpose Church High School Ministry Podcast. Whether this is your first episode or you've heard them all, God has something to say to you. Our vision is to see every student everywhere following Jesus, and we hope this message helps you take your next step in your faith. To learn more about our high school ministry, visit our website, purposechurch.com/HSM, and check us out on Instagram at purposehsm. We hope you enjoy today's episode.
We have been going through a series called More Than Sex, and last week we talked about dating. This week, we're going to talk about singleness, okay? And before you guys start thinking, oh, I got a girlfriend already, this isn't for me, we're going to talk about singleness where basically everyone in this room except for a handful of leaders are considered single because you're unmarried, okay? So if you're unmarried, which is probably every student in this room, this will apply to you, okay? But oftentimes, I feel like when we talk about singleness in the church, we often think of this. This is not about that. But I thought you guys might like that song. I know it's Jeremiah's favorite song. But first and foremost, if we're going to talk about singleness, I think it's really important for us to define what God views marriage as, okay? That was a cool sound. That was my voice. If we're gonna talk about singleness, we need to define what God views marriage as so what we can know if we're not married and we're not the things that God defines marriage as, then we are a single person. Even from the beginning of the Bible, God talks about this concept that we use in a biblical context of marriage. So Genesis 2:24, right there, first book of the Bible, two chapters in. A man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh. Okay? This term flesh is broader than physical. Okay? It's not just a physical unity. It's a full donation of yourself to another person. Okay, how many of you guys in here like chemistry? Oh, like three of you. Yeah, I don't know much on chemistry. Like, I know that a mole exists, but I really only know what a mole is in biology. Okay, that's an animal. That's not a measurement. I don't know what that is. How many of you guys know what happens when you mix sodium and chloride? Salt? Salt, right? Salt? Did someone say explosion? I thought I heard it. What'd you say? You did say explosion. Okay, yeah. No, not an explosion. When you take sodium and you take chloride, both of these things that are actually quite like chlorine's toxic. Like, you can't eat that. But if you put them together, they become salt. And it's not like you could just throw them in a bowl and all of a sudden, boom, salt appears. It goes through a process. And I know it's kind of frowned upon to use AI for a sermon, but I really liked when I Google searched the question how the AI answered it. So we're going to use AI today. When sodium and chlorine come together, they form salt because the sodium atom readily loses an electron to the chlorine atom, creating a positively charged sodium ion and a negatively charged chlorine ion, which are then attracted to each other due to their opposite charges, forming an ionic bond. Essentially, the sodium donates an electron to the chlorine, resulting in the formation of salt. I was like, hey, that's kind of cool. I was just talking about how the term becoming one flesh is a full donation of yourself to another person. So in the same concept like of science, the idea of donating yourself is part of this unity. In Ephesians 5:22 through 25, it says, wives, submit yourself to your own husbands as you do to the Lord. Look at this. Submit. Let's replace it with the word donate. Donate yourselves. For the husband is the head of the wife as Christ is the head of the church, his body of which he is the Savior. Now as the church submits or donates to Christ, so also wives should donate to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and donates himself up for her. You see, there is a mutual giving. Okay? It's not that is for me, it is I am for that. Both directions. And the Song of Solomon, which high schoolers don't read this one. I'm just kidding. This is a little spicy. Right here, Solomon's wife is saying, my beloved is mine and I am his. Matthew 19:4-6. Jesus replied, haven't you read that at the beginning, the creator made them male and female and said, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife and the two will become one flesh. Sound familiar? He's quoting that original book of the Bible, right? The first book. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. So now I want to jump into the chapter that we're going to spend most of the time on tonight, okay? We're going to spend most of our time in 1 Corinthians 7. So if you guys have your Bibles, go ahead and flip over there. We're pretty much going to read the whole chapter. I feel like you can't talk about marriage or singleness in the church without going to this chapter of the Bible. 1 Corinthians 7, 3-4 is going to start off talking about marriage. So this is Paul, who wrote a lot of the letters to the churches, a lot of the New Testament, and he is talking to the Corinthians about marriage right here. The husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but yields or donates that same concept to her husband. In the same way, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but yields it to his wife. Okay. In this day and age and living in Western culture, this probably sounds just like what we all expect. Yes, men and women are equal. At the time this was said, these first century men would have been shocked. They would have looked at this and been like, but isn't my wife my property? Right? This is a completely new concept to them. They would have no idea how to navigate this. Hence why you need Jesus in your life. You need help navigating these things. And so what we're going to talk about tonight is singleness. And so I'm going to make it really clear. Singleness in this case is anything outside of marriage, okay? If you're a single person and you're not dating someone, you're single. If you're a young person that's dating someone, you're still single. If you're like me, where I'm engaged, I am not a married person. So this is for everyone in those categories. I see you shaking your head no there. Yes, so if I, even though I'm engaged, I am still a single person in the context of what we're talking about tonight. None of us have become one flesh with a married person. Like, we're not married into that one flesh unity. So Paul's going to go on here. We're going to jump ahead a little bit to verse 17. Paul's going to go on here and start talking about, he's going to move from the concept of marriage to talking about the change of status, moving from single to married. And so he's going to give a warning about that status. He's going to say, each person should live as a believer in whatever situation the Lord has assigned to them, just as God has called them. This is the rule I lay down in all the churches. He's saying this to everyone. This is not unique to this group. This is very much so. This is what I say to the church. Jumping ahead three verses, he's going to say, each person should remain in the situation they were in when God called them. Verse 24, brothers and sisters, each person, as responsible to God, should remain in the situation they were in when God called them. Okay, Paul says it three times in like eight verses. We should probably pay attention to what he means here. What he is saying is that when you meet Christ, you should stay in the situation you're in. Basically saying, if you're single, stay single. If you're married when you meet Christ, stay married. And it's not because one is better than the other. Because he's trying to make a point. Jesus is not necessarily interested in the circumstance you are in when you meet him. He is concerned wholeheartedly about how we love him in those circumstances. Here's what I mean by this. Is it better to be a Christian as an adult or as a kid? Is it better to be a Christian as an American or an Asian person? Is it better to be a Christian tall or short, rich or poor? No, these things don't matter. They don't affect the relationship. Well, they can affect, but I should say, they aren't the reason that your relationship with Christ is better or worse. And in the same thing, it applies to being married or single. Neither one of these things is completely relevant to how good your relationship with Christ is. Christianity is not defined by relationship status. Every single person in this room, including the married people, can say at one point in their life they were single. Every single person. Not every person can say they've been married. Another example, you could live happily married for 10, 50, 20 years, whatever it is. Odds are, this is kind of morbid, but odds are one of you in that marriage will eventually live as a single person again for some time. You probably won't pass away at the same time. This is an important stage of life. You have to understand how to live your life for Christ, single or married. But single has to come first because we all go through singleness. Also, Jesus is our perfect example, right? We're supposed to look towards Jesus, and that's how we should live our lives. Jesus wasn't married. Not once does it say he was married in the Bible. So if Jesus is going to stay single, then that's a declaration to us that that's not just okay. That's something we can strive to do if we want to. Paul is also going to then move ahead into the warnings of marriage. Now, I'm not here to scare you guys out of marriage. That's not what's happening, okay? But I do want to point out that there are hardships that come with marriage that are unique to marriage. And there are hardships that come to singleness that are unique to singleness. In verse 27, Paul says this, "Are you pledged to a woman? Do not seek to be released." Basically, are you engaged? Don't try to get out of it. That's not what I'm saying. Are you free from such a commitment? Do not look for a wife. If you're not engaged, don't spend your time just going out and looking for someone to date. Verse 28 says, "But if you do marry, you have not sinned." Okay, I want to stop here for a second. In our culture, it's so often that you hear, "Who are you going to marry? Who are you dating to end up marrying?" That is a goal. If that's such a big goal in the Bible, why does Paul word it as "you have not sinned"? That doesn't sound very exciting. Like, you would almost expect if, like, Western culture was writing this, it would say, "But if you do marry, good, because that's what you're supposed to do." But Paul says, "You have not sinned." Basically, he's saying here, guys, it's okay. You can choose that, or you can choose not to, and both are good options. Continues on by saying, "But those who marry will face many troubles in this life, and I want to spare you this." That's a pretty bold statement. He goes on to say, "What I mean, brothers and sisters, is that the time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they do not." Pause. Okay. He's not saying get a divorce. He's not saying if you have a wife, start acting like you're single again. He's going to go on to continue saying, "But those who mourn should live as if they did not. Those who are happy should live as if they were not. Those who buy something should live as if it were not theirs to keep. Those who use the things of the world should live as if not engrossed in them. For this world in its present form is passing away." Basically, he's saying here, guys, that all of those things that we hold for our status need to go to the side, and we need to focus on Christ in all of it. He's not saying that if you are married, you should no longer live in marriage. That's not the context here. The context here is you should be following Jesus in that marriage. He goes on to say, "I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs." He's concerned, how can I please the Lord? "But a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world. How can he please his wife? And his interests are divided." Okay, this is not a bad thing. If you're married, pay attention to your spouse. Okay? If you get married, don't ignore your spouse and start acting as if, honey, I have only the Lord's affairs to deal with. Get out of the room. That's not going to work. If you choose to be married, it's biblical to treat your husband or wife as one flesh, that unity we were talking about. Emotionally, spiritually, sexually, all of these things are important in a marriage. But that takes up time. Time that if you were single, you could do different things for the kingdom of Christ. Not necessarily better, not necessarily worse. Different opportunities. Here's what I mean. Right now, if any of you wanted to go on a missions trip for 8 months as a single person, that's rad. Tell me all about it when you get back. If you did that married, you may come back a single person. I would definitely say that is not a biblical way to treat your husband or wife. It's good to be single. It's good to be married, as long as the life being built is Christ-centered. He's going to continue on in verse 35. I am saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way with undivided devotion to the Lord. A woman is bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if her husband dies, she is free to marry anyone she wishes. Okay, still a lot of freedom here. No one's saying marriage is wrong, but he must belong to the Lord, right? Okay, so yeah, saying if you're married, husband passed away, and you make another choice, the context of these people here is honestly not that many of them have been Christians for very long. It's a little different for us. We can go into a dating relationship starting with the idea of they should be a Christian like me. Verse 40 says, in my judgment, she is happier if she stays as she is. Oh my gosh, Paul just said women in this situation tend to be happier not married again as Christians. What? This is kind of crazy. But I think the point he's trying to make here is this. Don't expect marriage to be a means to fulfillment. Okay? I want to point something out. Single or married, lust exists in marriage. Greed exists in marriage. Whatever sin you're dealing with now as a single person does not go away when you get married. If anything, there's a chance it'll be worse, harder to hide, more difficult to get through. Any sin you can do as a single person, you can do in marriage. I would take it on as a challenge. If any of you guys can prove me wrong on that, I'll concede to that, but I don't see any sin you could do as a single person that you can't do in marriage. Marriage does not fix our sin problem. And I think oftentimes we go through our life looking as if, man, if that girl just dates me for a little bit, I swear I'm gonna be so good at this. And like, we're gonna talk about it a little bit more next week, but like a lot of people go into marriage, man, I'm dealing with lust as a single person, but man, when I can have sex every night with my wife or husband, that's gonna go away. That's not true. Sin is sin. Marriage will not fix it. Jesus will. So this brings up a bunch of questions for us. And if you're anything like me, the questions that come up after I'm reading all this is, well then, what do I do as a single person? Like, this is all great that it's okay to be single, but now what do I do? How do I make singleness a purpose and not just a waiting period to be married? Well, first, I think, number one, you should embrace your identity in Christ. 2 Corinthians 5:17 says this, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old has gone, the new is here. You are no longer focusing on who you are based on your relationship status or your achievement or your insecurities or your physique. You are a child of God. You are fearfully and wonderfully made by the creator of the universe. Number two, deepen your relationship with God. I can't emphasize this enough. Pouring into your relationship with Christ will be the best thing for you to be good at if you want to be good at loving your spouse. It says this in Revelation 19, let us rejoice and be glad and give him glory, for the wedding of the Lamb has come and his bride has made herself ready. Guys, this is referencing that Christ is the figurehead of the marriage and his bride is the church. Christ laid down his life for all of us. That is the example of marriage. If you think that's easy and marriage will just be fun, pay attention to that. It's not easy, and it's not always fun. But if you're going to choose to be married, do it in a way that exemplifies who Christ is. Lay down your life for one another, okay? back to that full donation to the other person. It's no longer about you. Jesus is an example of the groom and the church is his bride. A relationship with Christ is a direct mirror of how we need to treat our spouses. We need to yearn for the relationship we have with Christ. Psalm 42, 1 through 2 says it this way. This is the attitude and posture we need to have for the relationship with Christ. As the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, my God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When can I go and meet with God? Matthew 6, 33 puts it this way. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. First, in everything, in singleness, in marriage, in school, in work, first the kingdom and his righteousness. All right, number three, serve and build your community. Galatians 5:13 says, you, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge in the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. 1 Peter 4:10, each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. One of these gifts that Peter's talking about here could simply mean that you have the flexibility of time because you're single. You may be able to help someone in a time of need at 2 a.m. because you're sleeping in the bed by yourself. Like, if someone calls you at 2 a.m. and you're married, you might get kicked out of the bed real quick. Romans 12:10, be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. This verse is often used at weddings to share about how to love one another. But what if we chose to lens this not just in marriage, but to show how to build the community around us? What if as a single person, we could choose to love wholeheartedly the people around us like Jesus did? Could you imagine how powerful that would be? Number four, guard your heart and purity. I want to take a minute on this one. We're going to talk a lot about this next week. But tonight, I also want to point out, as a single person, this does have some unique ways this manifests in your life, okay? This has some, like this is hard as a single person, and it's hard in marriage. But I think where you guys are all at and the age you are, this is such an important thing. Proverbs 4:23, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. This isn't just saying, like, guard your heart. Like you got to take care of your heart health. And I don't just mean cardio. Like, go do cardio. That's great. But make sure that your heart is in check. Every decision you make is going to come from what you feel is the best way to love or the best way to fulfill yourself. All of these things, guard your heart. 1 Corinthians 6:18, flee from sexual immorality. All other sins a person commits are outside of the body, but whoever sins sexually sins against their own body. I'm going to talk about a book right now. How many of you guys have heard of C.S. Lewis? Right? Chronicles of Narnia, right? Okay. He wrote this really interesting book that you guys may or may not know about that's called The Screwtape Letters. Anyone ever heard of this? Okay, it's wild. He writes it from the perspective as if an archdemon is training a new demon on how to take down Christians. It's really awesome. It's a cool perspective. I'm going to read you a section of it, and a little bit is going to be, some of these words are bigger than I can handle, okay? I hope we can decipher it right afterward, but this book is explaining the strategic ways that Satan tries to pull Christians away from God's plan, and this is how the demon describes the tactics they use to skew the view of sex and marriage. The enemy, which is, so demon's perspective, the enemy here is Jesus, described a married couple as one flesh. He did not say a happily married couple or a couple who married because they were in love. But you can make the humans ignore that. You can also make them forget that the man they call Paul, who wrote the thing, the whole chapter we're talking about tonight, the man they call Paul did not confine it to married couples. Mere copulation for him makes one flesh. You can thus get humans to accept as rhetorical eulogies of being in love what were in fact plain descriptions of the real significance of sexual intercourse. The truth is that wherever a man lies with a woman, There, whether they like it or not, a transcendental relation is set up between them, which must be eternally enjoyed or eternally endured. Okay, that's a lot. What is being said here? Anytime that you have sex, in marriage or outside of marriage, it is setting up an opportunity for that unity we were talking about, that one flesh. I'm not saying that if you have sex before marriage, you are now one flesh and you're forced to marry that person. No. It's opening up that spiritual and emotional vulnerability. You can either eternally enjoy that with your spouse, or you have to deal with the fact that you've done that with someone else. So I want to be like a little bit clear on this. A lot of you guys are in an age where sex is being sold to you left and right. The idea, the concept of sex is everywhere. You guys can only lose your virginity once. It doesn't come back. Sin breaks things. All sins break things. But I do want to emphasize something really heavy on this. There is so much forgiveness with Jesus Christ, okay? This is not me condemning if you've had sex, you're a bad person. No. But I am saying if you haven't yet and you're thinking about it outside of marriage, I'm telling you right here, from the perspective of a demon, that is a goal of theirs. That is a goal of the enemy, is to make you think that that's going to be fine. What was talked about last week in dating, Gavin talked about this. When you cross boundaries, it hurts. There's pain with that. But with Jesus, there's also forgiveness. And I want to make it very, very clear. There is so much forgiveness. 2 Timothy 2:22 says, "Flee the evil desires of youth and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart." Number 5, live with purpose, not passively. Ephesians 2:10, "For we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do." Colossians 3:23 through 24, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving." Proverbs 16:3, "Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and he will establish your plans." And our final point, number 6, trust God's timing. In Proverbs 3, 5 through 6, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit or donate yourself to him, and he will make your path straight." Ecclesiastes 3:11, "He has made everything beautiful in its time." Romans 8:28, "And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." We can trust him, guys. Sometimes it doesn't look like it, but he is working for our good. And I want to point something out about these 6 points. I want you to notice something. I think that talking on singleness alone is really difficult because these 6 points work perfectly in a marriage sermon. Okay? And I think I'm going to double down on what I said earlier. This idea that singleness or marriage is better or worse for your relationship with Christ isn't true. This idea that if I'm married, things will be better. No. All of these 6 points, you take them into a marriage. You still trust God's timing. You still are going to live with purpose and not on the sidelines, right? So I want you guys to take that tonight. I want you to take the idea that even though you are living as a single Christian, that is still something you need to just focus on your relationship with Christ. And then take that into a marriage if that's where you end up. We're going to head off to life groups now. If you guys are new, come up to the front. Claire and Gavin will show you where your life groups are meeting. But other than that, let's all head to life groups.